Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its authors' intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special 2-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.
Senator Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Senator Lindsey Graham, who's also a senior member of that same committee, are saying is that that there are some inconsistent statements that Mr. Steele made to the FBI, and they want the Justice Department to look into whether or not there was any criminal wrongdoing by potentially lying to them.
He was shopping this dossier to every journalist he could find, and I think that's inappropriate for somebody who's being an informant.
You're right to point out that the Republicans in Congress, especially on the House Intelligence Committee, have made a real issue of Fusion GPS.
He's a foreign agent, and he produced this dossier that has all kind of salacious things in it.
Hello, and welcome to TrumpCast, the show about the very stable genius,
Our president.
Donald Trump. Joining me in the studio is Virginia Heffernan. Hi, Virginia.
Hi.
It's been an eventful couple hours, couple days, couple weeks while I was away.
We just should use "it's been an eventful couple of days" as the intro to every TrumpCast, but this surely has. Last week, Trump talked about the big button that he was going to use to wreck mankind. We've forgotten about that.
We've forgotten about his Dr. Evil moment. I know you've been feeling bad for Steve Bannon about the untimely end of his career.
I just worry about Steve Bannon. Ben Wittes on Twitter said Bannon and I were thinking alike recently when Bannon said that Don Jr. was being treasonous. I can't tell. Does Bannon have another card up his sleeve? So he broke with Trump by talking to Michael Wolff, and then he lost the support of the Mercers, and then Breitbart fired him.
Yeah, I mean, when you get fired by Breitbart, you know.
And you're Steve Bannon.
He is Breitbart. What's Breitbart without Steve Bannon?
We haven't seen more damage to Breitbart since Andrew Breitbart died. But so Bannon, I think one possibility, speaking of eventfulness, is Bannon should run Joe Arpaio for Arizona's campaign. I mean, Arpaio.
Maybe that's the presidential ticket. Bannon Arpaio. To challenge Trump in the primaries.
Wait, we shouldn't even joke.
So, Virginia, you are wearing today a Russian Matryoshka doll dress. I love that. Those are the nesting dolls that you... And that's the classic. You don't have the Lenin inside Gorbachev, inside Karl Marx. You have, the classic Russian doll.
It's a girl on the front. I mean, the reason that I'm wearing this is that we talk a lot about meetings with the Russians, and the Russian people, of course, should be distinguished from the Kremlin and from the FSB. And, we were careful during the Cold War to say that the Russians have a wonderful heritage and Tolstoy and so on, and that their government was the one oppressing them first and foremost. And I don't think we make that distinction now. So this is Putin has been, above all, damaging to the wonderful people of Russia, whom we all love, and their nesting dolls.
Well, it's a great point, and it's very appropriate because we'll be back right after the break to talk about the dossier and Glenn Simpson's testimony.
Mm-hmm.
So, Virginia, we're here to talk about the transcript of Glenn Simpson's testimony in August before the Senate Judiciary Committee, which Dianne Feinstein released on her own authority. How late were you up reading it?
I think it's 312 pages. I think I stayed up till 3:12 a.m. And, I like symbolism. Trump, we've learned from Michael Wolff, doesn't like to read. We knew he didn't like to read. He has made readers of all of us. We had to cram Fire and Fury, and now we had to cram this Simpson testimony. And, I'm a little glassy-eyed this morning. How
Man,
about you?
You see the shadows under my eyes. I mean, I thought it would put me right to sleep, and I was up for hours. It was fascinating.
The passive-aggressive back and forth, with some of them was itself a little subplot to the whole thing.
I'm speaking to you voluntarily.
Yes,
basically,
exactly.
I can walk out at any time. I don't have to answer anything you say. But Simpson was pretty forthcoming. I mean, he answered. His lawyer steered him away from a few of the questions, but he told them pretty much what they wanted to know.
Well, most of these interviews that haven't happened on camera have not been released, or we haven't seen the transcript of them before the congressional committees. But this one, Glenn Simpson published an op-ed saying that his testimony, his full 10 hours of testimony, he believes should be released so that he could finally explain himself and be seen to explain himself before the public. This is Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS, which commissioned a British intelligence officer to produce the Steele dossier. Chuck Grassley, who has been very critical of Fusion GPS and critical of the Steele dossier, initially said, of course, they could release the testimony, and then changed his mind. And so, as you say, Dianne Feinstein took it upon herself to release it. We've seen, in the past week, Julian Assange at WikiLeaks has released the complete text of Michael Wolff's book. So this thing of slipping to the public, various relevant documents to Trump is now we have.
Well, let's not compare the two things. The WikiLeaks thing is pure copyright infringement.
But the reason I want to bring it up is that this document that, as you say, you and I spent a long time reading last night, it's 300 plus pages, is kind of the Lafayette Roos nerd answer to Fire and Fury. So if you like the reality show of the White House, Fire and Fury is your book. If you really want to get in the weeds on Trump Russia, you need to read this testimony.
Well, it's interesting you compare Michael Wolff and Glenn Simpson. I actually would put them on parallel tracks in certain ways. They are both guys I have grave doubts about, but I think lots of what they say is true.
I think I said this on Twitter. Both documents, Fire and Fury and this one, people say are 70% true. How about that for false specificity? I mean, I think, and this gets to the Steele dossier being 70% true, is why can't we just check out the Steele dossier? Why do we have to sit around and speculate about Simpson's methods or what Christopher Steele's character in figuring this thing out? Why doesn't someone just go to Moscow and sort out the truth from the lies of the Steele dossier? Because that's what's at stake here.
Well, I think some reporters have tried to do that. Luke Harding, the Guardian journalist who was on the show, who has interviewed Steele a couple of times, has tried to. It's, you can't just ring up the FSB and say, we just want to check some things. This is the New Yorker fact-checking department. I mean, the penalty for people in the Russian apparatus for talking to reporters mm-hmm. seems to be death. That seems to have occurred to possibly one person. Well, Steele says he wasn't a source, but someone who might have been thought to be a source, a former FSB agent, a current FSB agent, was found dead in his car. And Simpson...
I think he's a former FSB agent if he's dead, but we should ask.
Whether he was former before he was formered, I'm not sure. But Simpson actually says in this transcript we read, you know, he doesn't want to give out names of any of Steele's sources, in part because he just is, or even people who work for him, because his people are in this jeopardy in this context. Putin kills people, you know, and you can't, yeah. And that was his main reason for not wanting it to become public before it did become public. But maybe just before we get into that
Definitely.
A little bit, I think we just have to set a little more context here
yeah.
about who Glenn Simpson is and what his company, Fusion GPS, is. You know, Glenn Simpson, I mean, unlike Michael Wolff, I think Glenn Simpson was an excellent journalist. He was a dogged reporter who was known as a digger when he was at the Wall Street Journal. And I mean, I knew him years back in Washington. I think the problem with Glenn Simpson is he's just like a lot of people who stay in Washington too long. He got greedy and he became a hired gun and he would work for anybody. But as a journalist, and what Fusion GPS does as a company is it sort of combines methods of journalistic investigation with what private detectives or private investigators do. And he sort of does, he's professionalized opposition research for companies, for people spreading propaganda in some cases.
Yeah.
And he says he's not political, he'll work for anybody, but the information is sound and the information is good. And I think that's probably... largely true. I think it certainly characterizes the dossier. The dossier was not created as anti-Trump propaganda. He says that Christopher Steele, who he hired, didn't know who was paying the piper to create it.
His client, that is Christopher Steele's client, and Orbis, his company. This thing, if you're really in the weeds, you don't call it the Steele dossier. You call it the Orbis report, because Steele contracted with other people himself to make this document. Steele and Orbis saw their client as Fusion GPS. So this subcontracting thing, which they get into in this testimony, in the Senate testimony that, you know, is now available, I do think we need to talk about Glenn Simpson, because so much of the testimony is about what the fusion in Fusion GPS is and what its methods are. Because the whole testimony is toward either establishing the authority of the Steele dossier, you know, which goes to the case for collusion, or discrediting it. And the Republicans pretty clearly in the testimony are discrediting it, and the Democrats are trying to give support to it. So the whole beginning is about who is this guy Glenn Simpson and what are his methods. Now you've known him for a long time. I want to push back a tiny bit on the suggestion that he is de facto credible. The first thing is, as you say, it is incredibly hard to fact check FSB stuff. He had worked a lot on Russia, but never been to Russia, he says in the testimony. And he's a journalist in the sense we saw a profile of him this week in the New York Times. He has a history of drunkenness, of silliness, of some of the Michael Wolfe kind of stuff. He scratches his stomach. He had a dog take a shit on someone. I mean, these are like the details that the New York Times saw fit to tell us. So he's one of those, you know, and there's some drunken accident that happened when he was a teenager where a friend of his died at a party. His mother was held liable for it. Why are these things relevant? Because they tell you a little bit about the sort of kind of guy he was bopping around Washington. Now, his skill, unlike Michael Wolff's, was not for sitting on the scene. As I say, he never went to Russia, but for basically filing FOIAs, as far as I can tell. He loves documents. He's clear in the testimony that he has very little to do with the business operations, or at least claims to have little to do with the business operations of Fusion. And he thought that he could take his skill for these documents to this new operation of business intelligence. So he's been criticized by Bill Browder on this show for being a lobbyist, for being a, quote, paid liar, for producing propaganda. But he saw himself originally as doing business intelligence. There is a lot of money in business intelligence. I don't think he got the kind of clients he wanted to have. the kind of clients that go to some of the like white shoe business intelligence firms and put them on retainer, companies like Google and so forth. And he ended up doing this kind of hired gun stuff. And we have no way of fact checking whether he got things right or not.
Yeah. Well, this kind of work is akin to lobbying. It's all hired gun stuff. He didn't, in the transcript, he pointedly declines to name his clients, so on the business side, so we don't really know who he works for. But he did have this background in political journalism, and he clearly was a go-to investigator for political campaigns looking to outsource opposition research. And this started during the Republican primaries when Paul Singer, who's a New York investment banker who was very, very anti-Trump before, like every other establishment Republican going on bended knee to Trump once he became the nominee and then the president, hired him through this Washington newspaper he funds, mm-hmm. the Washington Beacon, to dig up dirt on Trump. And that's the project that turned into hiring Steele and the dossier, although by that time, the Washington Beacon and Paul Singer weren't paying for it anymore. There was someone new paying who was on the Hillary Clinton side. But none of that seemed to be particularly relevant to Glenn Simpson or to Christopher Steele. What's interesting about it is, one, hired gun will work for Republicans, will work for Democrats, mm-hmm. will work for for-profit companies, work for anybody. And two, he's politics is what he seems to be really good at. I mean, I don't know if he's the guy you really hire if you've got a project at the FDA that involves policy and regulatory changes.
You know, the stuff you bring up is legitimate, but it's not stuff in the testimony. So he says he doesn't, obviously doesn't say he does lobbying. He says he doesn't place or quash.
No, I'm not saying he does lobbying. I'm saying what he does is akin to lobbying is that your loyalty is not to a party or your views or morality. Mm-hmm. It's who's going to pay your fee.
Right.
And that's how he ended up working for these Russians and being associated with all of the people who were in the Trump Tower meeting and how he was hired to discredit Bill Browder. And the whole first 100 pages of this testimony focuses on him being challenged about what the hell were you doing trying to discredit Bill Browder.
Right.
And I think he puts up a very weak defense about that. I mean, the issue he tries to raise is, though, you know, Browder was a tax exile. He changed his residency to not have to pay U.S. taxes. Mm-hmm. But Bill Browder has basically lived abroad for 20 years. He lives in London. To me, that's not a strong point. It doesn't discredit anything Browder says to say he renounced his U.S. citizenship. Now, if he were really living in the United States and somehow faking it, that would be a good point. But Bill Browder lives in London. Before that, he lived in Russia.
I want to get back to, we can come to what to make of, if we want to, Bill Browder's house and or looks like what Glenn Simpson says is his residence in Aspen, Colorado, still part of the continental U.S., and his money, his stashed money in Cyprus. But I want to figure out what the Senate wanted to figure out, which is who Glenn Simpson works for, and is he doing, can what he does be called doing lying and propaganda? And we should expose the biases of the show. Bill Browder's been on. Both of us have read Red Notice. We are, you know, generally think that the work Glenn Simpson did in concert with Natalia Veselnitskaya, who was in that meeting, the Trump Tower meeting, was opposition research and was an effort to smear him with what became a documentary. At the same time, we have reason to believe the Steele dossier. So these are two productions of Glenn Simpson, or at least in an attenuated way with the Steele dossier, one of which might be, you know, dubious, if not malevolent, and commissioned even if in a reach way by Russians. And the other one, we believe, because he worked for Democrats and Republicans, because he used someone in Chris Steele who's credible, might be eminently credible and a pretext for for this investigation of Trump-Russia. So what do we make of these two sides of what Fusion GPS does?
I don't see any contradiction in saying Glenn Simpson was wrong to try to discredit Bill Browder. It was a shitty job he shouldn't have taken, and I think he owes Browder and a lot of people a huge apology for it. But I don't think there's any contradiction between saying that and saying, look, the dossier is pretty credible. Nobody thinks it's 100% true, but it's not fake. It's not 100% untrue. Mm-hmm. It was done by probably the most credible person who could have done that kind mm-hmm. of reporting at that point. And we need to find out more about the allegations in the dossier. Mm-hmm. But the assumption should be, I mean, you have someone who's fundamentally credible, Christopher Steele, and you have someone who's fundamentally not credible, Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But Christopher Steele is not saying that 100% of what I heard and put in these memos is true. So, you know, that's our reporting project. And it's, as you say, a very hard one because it involves a lot of facts that are kind of ungettable.
I'm still just a word to Rolling Stone or any place that would pay me to go to the Ritz Moscow and try to sleep on that mattress and see if kick the tires of the Steele dossier by talking to the housekeeping staff at the Moscow Ritz. Well, I'm open for that assignment. So let's talk about the Steele dossier and Christopher Steele delivering his findings on his own initiative to the FBI.
So here's what happened, according to Glenn Simpson. Christopher Steele found all this stuff out and was so troubled because he thought Donald Trump was being blackmailed by Russia that he took it to the FBI. And there was that wasn't part of the job. That was, I think, Glenn Simpson. It's a little unclear whether Glenn Simpson had to agree to that in advance or whether Steele just did it. It sounded like Steele just did it.
Steele just did it, and he said he either was apprised, this is Glenn Simpson, apprised of it, or wasn't, but he certainly didn't give Christopher leave to do it. That was Christopher Steele leave to do it. Steele acted on his own initiative. I mean, let's remind ourselves, Steele is not yet in the fusion business entirely. He's not fusing journalism and intelligence. He's an MI6 officer who's accustomed to thinking about national security. Now, granted, national security in the UK, but, you know, he's worried about world stability and, you know, what I've heard people call a contaminated campaign in the campaign of Donald Trump. So he goes to the FBI, and what happens?
Well, contrary to what the Republicans have been alleging, him going to the FBI is not what started the investigation into Donald Trump. They had already heard from the Australian ambassador who had had a convert who run into a drunk George Papadopoulos at a bar, and Papadopoulos said, I think the Russians have compromise on Hillary. And he and maybe are going to weaponize it. And the Australian ambassador went to the FBI. So when Christopher Steele came, the FBI agents, and it sounded like Christopher Steele approached him through this guy in Rome, but they said this matches up with stuff we're hearing elsewhere. And that was part of why the FBI found it credible.
So all of the Anglosphere mobilizes to try to, well, at least Australia and a UK intelligence officer mobilized to go to the FBI or go to American intelligence and say, you have a problem on your hands with this campaign. We think this campaign is compromised, is contaminated, is not yet, I don't think the word collusion was being used, well, possibly by the Australian person, but is blackmailable. And that's alarming, but why didn't it send up the kind of alarms for the FBI that Steele expected it to?
Well, Steele at some point became disenchanted with the FBI's response and seemed to think that they were biased in favor of Trump and they were pressing hard with the Hillary email investigation and were not taking seriously the Trump investigation. And there was that weird Halloween, October 31st, New York Times story that quoted FBI sources basically wrongly kind of exonerating Trump on this. And that part of it is very murky. But I think I keep coming back to this point. Christopher Steele is someone in this episode who did the right thing.
Yeah.
He thought he had evidence of Russia corrupting the election, Trump being blackmailed. He went to the authorities. What the Trump campaign people, if they had an ounce of decency, would have done themselves when they were approached by the Russians. And Steele, as his reward for being a stand-up guy and doing the right thing, is now subject to these calls from Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee to be charged or investigated, again, because they think it's a contradiction in his testimony because he may have talked to a reporter and he said he didn't. It's complete nonsense. I mean, we've heard nothing at all that has impeached the righteousness and credibility of Christopher Steele. I think we have about Glenn Simpson, but not about Christopher Steele.
Yep.
And the Republicans, I mean, I think they're just behaving so atrociously, you know. And Lindsey Graham, who was kind of the hope of, you know, one of the very few elected Republicans in the Senate who seemed to be capable of standing up to Donald Trump and was doing it briefly, has now completely caved and become the worst of the worst. And I don't know how that happened, but
I don't know how he broke bad either. Something happened on the golf course. Lindsey Graham, after Corker said Trump belonged in adult daycare, Lindsey Graham went and played golf with Donald Trump, and he went to the golf game looking like the Lindsey Graham who said it would be the beginning of the end of the Trump presidency if Trump fired Mueller. And he came out saying Trump hit a 73 in wet and windy conditions. And from then on, and see, you guys are laughing because you know that that's Tiger Woods quality.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that until, you know, everyone pointed that out, that he's suddenly in dear leader mode. Anyway, Lindsey Graham, leaving him aside, there is one other person on the Senate and of the Republicans who has respected the dossier and Steele's work. And of course, that's John McCain. So tell me about McCain, because that's who Steele went to. One of the people Steele went to early on.
And it seems to be McCain's office that leaked it one way or the other. We don't know that for sure. But Simpson says he didn't. Steele says he didn't. I don't think McCain has said that he didn't. So in terms of how it got to BuzzFeed, directly or indirectly, and it's worth pointing out that Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen,
yes,
is now filed a lawsuit against BuzzFeed and against Fusion GPS, which opens up the interesting possibility of discovery around the dossier. Seems like a pretty ill-judged lawsuit.
Michael
but
Cohen,
I lost my point. But the point about McCain is, yes, McCain has stood up more than any other senator, but he's dying. He's at the end of his career, and it's sad. And I think also McCain has become very inconsistent, not two-faced like Lindsey Graham has, but I don't know that McCain is in a position right now physically to challenge Trump. He can't be the standard bearer.
If McCain dies, we can look forward to Joe Arpaio, also a bugbear of this show, running for his Senate seat, which was announced yesterday in a little tributary to this story. Michael Cohen's, let's talk about Michael Cohen and BuzzFeed before we go. Michael Cohen, Ben Smith has a op-ed in the New York Times. He's the editor of BuzzFeed, crowing today, and I think rightly, that 1 year ago, we can make that a pretext for this show, 1 year ago, BuzzFeed published the Steele dossier, very controversially, because it was so-called raw intelligence. It was a tip sheet, basically, notes for an unfact-checked article, let's say. It was framed as such by BuzzFeed. Publishing raw documents was, as you remember, one of the initial hopes of online journalism, that one of the things we could do was give people access to original documents. I think the publication of that was a good idea because it let Americans know that there was reason for this fervor around Trump-Russia. Without that, they might have believed the New York Times, they might have believed Republicans that this was some kind of witch hunt.
Nobody would be able to understand what was going on without the dossier. It'd be a dumb show. And if it hadn't been published, we would have spent the last year demanding that it would be published. And
yes,
everything would be about who has the dossier and who's going to leak the dossier and who's seen the dossier. And I say, let people see it and make up their own minds. It was not, as you say, published in a way that said these are true allegations. It was published in a way saying there is a document that is circulating in certain circles, which is crucial to understanding what's happening. The FBI has, the director of the FBI has informed the president about it. It's, to me, that's an easy case for publication. And I think BuzzFeed, despite the sanctimony of a lot of pompous Washington journalists, did exactly the right thing.
I do, too. And jealousy, by the way. So, but the reason Michael Cohen is suing BuzzFeed and Fusion is not because this intelligence was gathered by Christopher Steele. The only thing that bugs him is that, and Trump, is that it was leaked. So you know, what is it, defamation? I mean, I think you're right to mention, even as a, in passing, that the specter of Michael Cohen saying, well, I didn't go to Prague at this right time, that was a different Michael Cohen, and that constitutes what, defamation, that they got that fact wrong. But the specter of discovery on Michael Cohen, the Tom Hagen of the Trump syndicate, is, you know, has some people licking their chops because Michael Cohen is maybe not pure as the driven snow.
They don't believe in a free press, and they're just trying to intimidate them. But I think BuzzFeed has stood up to them pretty well so far.
Yeah.
Let's hope they continue to. Virginia, I think we better wrap it up. I don't know how much we've illuminated this, but I think we can recommend as reading the transcript of the Glenn Simpson interview. It's strangely compelling.
It really, really is. Yeah, I mean, you stayed up and read it on your phone, which we don't recommend. But, you know, print it out like our producer did and savor it.
Virginia, thanks again for joining me on the show.
Thanks, Jacob.
That's it for today's show. Hey, have you been listening to Slow Burn, Leon Nafok's podcast about Watergate? It is such a good show. I just listened to the most recent episode about conspiracy thinking and how it came out of Watergate. The show is so relevant to what's going on right now, and it's such a fun listen. I really recommend it. Check it out at slate.com/Watergate. And while you're at it, if you've been enjoying this podcast, please give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps people discover the show. Today's show is produced by Jason DeLeon. As always, I'm Jacob Weisberg. Thanks for listening to Trumpcast.